Thank you for being here. You make this ministry possible. Now, if you're here and you have questions about truth, about faith, about the Bible, about Jesus, about the existence of God even, I want you to know that we have built this place for you. We are working to make Gateway Community Church a place where non-churched people love to attend. And, you know, so if you come and you have some questions, you know, relax. We all have questions in different ways. You're not sure about God. You're not sure about this is not an endorsement, by the way, just saying. You're not sure about God. You're not sure about the Bible. You're trying to figure out. Today's message is for you because we are going to talk. We're going to get away from theology a little bit today, and we're going to get into philosophy and talk about what is truth. How do we know whether something is true or not? And we want to equip you to recognize the truth. Because the truth of the matter is, there are many conflicting values out there today, all claiming to be truth. And so we're going to look at that. But before we do, we want to. I've discovered something that is very concerning to me. Tucker kind of gave you a heads up about it. But the reason I'm concerned about it is because nobody's talking about it. But it's after careful research, I've made an interesting discovery. So bear with me. What I've discovered is that tomatoes are really bad for you. They're really, really, really bad for you. And they need to be banned. And so what I'm going to do is, at the end of the service, we're going to pass around a petition, and we're going to ask you to sign our Ban the Tomatoes position. Here's why I say what I'm saying. First of all, one of the things that we know is 94.4% of juvenile delinquents have eaten tomatoes. There is an unmistakable link between delinquency and tomatoes. Also, 87.1% of all adult offenders have eaten tomatoes. Those who are serving in our penitentiaries today, 87.1% have eaten tomatoes. It's affected them. Here's an interesting one you may not know. In 84% of people killed in automobile accidents in the year of 1958 were known to have eaten tomatoes that year. I mean, come on. This is getting serious. These tomatoes are not as innocent as they look. Red tomatoes are actually a communist plot. Think about it for a minute. If you are upset about me singling out particular groups, I want you to consider a couple of things. By the way, confidential informers do tell us that 92.3% of American card-carrying American communists have eaten tomatoes. Communist plot, I'm telling you. But if you say, okay, you're just pulling people out, let's talk about general populace, okay? Regardless of race, creed, national origin, here's what you need to know. People born before 1880 who have eaten tomatoes are all dead. All of them. 100% morality rate. 100%. Also, 100% of tomato eaters between 1915 and 1930 are in seriously failing health. They're losing their teeth, some of them. They're losing their hair. Their walking is unsteady. They're feeble. Their bones are brittle. And bringing it a little bit forward, and these are just facts, by the way. I want you to know that. These are just facts. People born between 1930 and my generation, the baby boomers, we're headed the same way. We're getting weaker. We're getting more feeble. It's getting a little bit more hard to get around. And there's not much hope for our recovery. Just saying. Studies have shown that if you withhold tomatoes from an addict, they will turn to substitutes like steak and potatoes, oranges, bananas. And if you withhold tomatoes and all of the substitutes, they will die a slow and painful death. I'm telling you. Now, some of you are doubting my statistics. That's one of the things about truth today. You just don't believe anything you hear. These statistics are true. I got to tell you, they're true. But you're doubting my statistics, so let me encourage you to try your own experiment. Take a goldfish. Get about a dozen or so tomatoes. Crush them to a pulp. That's about what it will look like by the time it gets to your stomach. Crush them into a pulp. Put that goldfish in that pulp, and I promise you, in a matter of minutes, that goldfish will be dead. And you say, well, wait a minute. Goldfish are different than human beings. They're different. Try this experiment. Take that same pulp tomato that you've just made, make it in a little bit bigger bowl. Take a friend, push his head in that bowl. Pretty soon, they'll be fighting for their life. I promise you. And be careful, by the way, when you're doing this, because if you get the tomato, that bow juice on the counter, and let it stay there, it's going to do some damage. Okay? So, now I've got a serious question for you. This is just a little bit of fun. I got a serious question for you. Are these the facts? Are these the facts? And yes, they are the facts. In a world full of statistical information, you get conflicting testimonies from experts. Now, these are facts that I have given you. Everything I said was absolutely true. Have they changed your mind about tomatoes? I hope not. Okay? Because if you did, I've done a better job than I need to do. Because in a world that we have statistical analysis, statistics, and information, conflicting testimony from the experts on every side, how do you really know what is true and what is false? I love this quote. I got it from the internet. The problem with quotes found on the internet are that they are often not true. Abraham Lincoln. Some of you missed that totally, I promise you. Some of the younger people, yeah, really? Can't imagine life without internet. Jesus is standing before Pilate. And he's being charged by Rome of treason because he's claiming to be king. And so Pilate is trying to get at this. And Jesus confirms to Pilate that he is king. But his kingdom is not of this world. So Pilate wants a little bit of clarity. So he says to Jesus, he says, "You are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered and said, "You are right in saying I'm a king. In fact, the reason I was born, that was the reason for this I was born, and for this I came into the world to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" Pilate asked. And with this, he went out again to the Jews and said, "I find no basis of charge against him." Now, we are in a series called Reality 101. And what we said last week is you can change reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of reality. No matter how hard you try, you cannot change the truth. Number one, you can't change the truth because you know in your heart when you're trying to do it, when you're trying to fudge. Number two, claiming that something isn't true doesn't make it not true. You can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring that reality. You know, in a pluralistic society, our society, someone once said that pluralism is the name a nation gives itself when it's in the process of moving from one doctrine to the next. And in a pluralistic society, truth for us has become very slippery. It's hard to get a hold of. And this opening video reminds us how some people say that, you know, it's relative, it's individual, what's true for you may not be true for me. And tolerance today has come to mean that not only do we tolerate people who disagree with us, but we have to agree that their view is just as valid as our view, which is ridiculous. So the Christian's view and the Muslim view and the atheist view are all of equal value, all equally true. And the answer to that is no, they are not. Now, you may not like that concept. The truth is narrow, but it's true. Truth is narrow in every part of life. In chemistry, if you have H2O, every time H2O is going to make what? Water. Okay, in mathematics, 2 plus 2 is going to equal 4. It's always going to equal 4. It doesn't matter what you want to do. You heard about little Timmy who was praying beside his bed one night. And he's praying, "Dear God, please, 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 make 2 plus 2 equal 5. And his mother said, "Timmy, why are you praying that prayer?" He said, "Because that's the answer I put on my test." A lot of us do that with truth. Earth sciences, I promise you, if you jump off the lip of the Grand Canyon, you are not going to float harmlessly across to the other side. You are going to die. You're going to the bottom. You can't change that. Truth is narrow in every area of life. Truth is narrow in the spiritual area of life as well. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." There is no other way to heaven. And you need to realize that. Now, you may not agree with that, but you have to recognize that as a truth claim, it's absolutely accurate, because truth is narrow. Truth is narrow in every area of life. Now, can we know truth? Some people, like Pilate, are skeptical. What is truth? No one can really know. We don't really think about this. I believe that we can know truth. So this morning, I want to get, like I said, a little bit philosophical, not theological with you for a little bit, and we want to talk about truth. Now, if I were to ask you that this Bible that's sitting on my thing, is this Bible moving? Is the Bible moving? No. At least not in relationship to the table. However, in relationship to the sun, it's actually moving in a very fast clip, as the whole earth is moving at an unbelievable speed. So you're right if you say the Bible is not moving in relationship to the table, but you would be wrong in saying this Bible is not moving in relationship to the sun. And so one of the common statements that we often hear about truth is it all depends. And if that's your thing, you know, you're thinking, okay, it all depends, then what you need to do, you owe it to yourself to go on and try to discover what does it depend upon. Then, once we define our frame of reference, we can decide whether something is true or not. Now, there are a few words that we have to describe truth. First of all, we have objective truth, and that's truth that exists regardless of one's perception of it. Like the guy in the video who said he didn't believe that gravity exists, didn't it make gravity not exist for him? Objective truth exists whether or not you perceive it as being there. Second word is subjective truth. Subjective truth may be different than what actually is. For instance, when you see the sunset, a beautiful sunset day, you perceive that sunset right on the horizon, but do you know that that sun is actually below the horizon by the time you see the sunset on the horizon? Because of refraction and time delay in what you say, you are seeing something that actually appears above the horizon when the reality is, the objective part of it is, it's already below the horizon. Third word is absolute, and this is what we normally think about truth. Absolute truth is truth that is totally unchangeable. It doesn't change with modern society and doesn't change with what we want. It is absolute. It stands there. And then finally, there's relative truth. Relative truth is truth that depends upon certain presuppositions. So, to help you with this concept, I have a truth chart that I want you to kind of look at. I'm going to give you four statements, and I want you to tell me, or think in your mind, and I'll tell you, we won't embarrass anybody, which four quadrants it fits in, because you got objective, subjective, absolute, relative. So the first statement that I have is this. It is warm. outside. That statement is relative objective, depending on one's perception of what they consider warm. Okay? Second statement, it is 60 degrees outside. That statement is an absolute objective truth. You can measure it. You can see it. You can know it. Third statement, it feels warm outside. It feels warm outside. That one is a subjective relative, subjective absolute, It feels like 60 degrees. Okay, that's a absolute subjective. And then the last one, it feels warm out, is subjective relative, depending again upon which you feel is warm. Now, I know this is kind of confusing, but stay with me because this is important. The search for truth may seem difficult and remote and perhaps uninteresting, and sometimes maybe even threatening. Because face it, some of us don't want to know the truth. Because we know that if we know the truth, it's going to go against what we want. Remember Christmas Story? Little boy Ralphie wants a BB gun, Red Ryder BB gun. And everybody tells him, you'll shoot your eye out, you'll shoot your eye out. And he doesn't want to hear that. He just wants that BB gun. He does get the BB gun for Christmas. And what does he do with the first shot that he takes? He hits something that bounces back, breaks his glasses, almost puts his eye out. He's got to come up with a story because he doesn't want his mother taking that BB gun away from him. So he makes up a story about an icicle falling down and breaking his glasses. And we're like that. When we know something, when we want something, we will twist the truth every way we can in order to get what we want. And then when reality sets in and we have the consequences, we're still not going to accept that. We want the truth to reflect what we believe, so we're going to make something up. You know, understanding an application of truth determines how we live. It determines our actions. And we are bombarded, as we mentioned today, with all sorts of things all around us that some of which is true. And what we do is we use our filters to get what we want. You know, we filter out what we like or don't like, and we filter in what we do like. We'll let that through because I like that one. I don't like that one. We're going to I'm just not going to accept that part of the Bible. There's got to be another explanation. And we use our filters to get what we want. And you can't argue with some people because there's no way you're going to win. I mean, it's just, you know, you're just wasting your breath because they've already made up their minds. Do not confuse them with the facts. They've already decided that they're going to reject that certain truth on the altar of what they want. Aldous Huxley was a guy like this. I don't know how many of you remember Aldous Huxley. He's one of the big guys in the evolution thing where they were pushing Darwinian evolution. He says this, for myself, as no doubt for most of my contemporaries, the philosophy of meaninglessness, and this is why he embraced evolution. It wasn't because there wasn't facts for creation. It's because he wanted something. He says, the philosophy of meaningless was essentially an instrument of liberation. The liberation we desired was simultaneously religion from a certain political and economic system and liberation from a certain system of morality. We objected with that morality because it interfered with our sexual freedom. And we objected with the political and economic system because it was unjust. Do you hear what he's just said? Bertrand Russell puts it another way. He said, it's not because the evidence for God wasn't there. It's just that if we accepted that evidence, we couldn't do what we want. So the rejection of truth in that particular case is not based on intellectual prowessness. It's based on a moral twist. When you find experts conflicting on different things, how do you determine which one is telling you the truth? And the first step to determining whether you want to know truth or not, I mean, you can go on the internet, you can see all kinds of Facebook posts with all kinds of false information and some with true information, and you know, you have to determine, which one do I accept? Which one do I accept? How do you determine that? Some people are pretty sure that you really can't know because, you know, you get these statistics like we did with the tomatoes, and they'll confuse you. Well, first step is you have to determine whether or not you want to know the truth. And you have to determine is, once you find the truth, are you willing to apply it to your life? Are you willing to do what it says? Or, like Huxley, are you content with twisting the truth so that you can have your desired ends? Now, philosophically, there are three tests for truth. It's kind of like a three-legged stool or a three-legged table. The first test is logical consistency. Logical consistency means, does the statement support itself? Is it logically consistent with itself? Now, we got logical consistency there. There's my truth table, and it can't stand. But logical consistency is it consistent with itself? For instance, the person who says no one can know anything for certain, that is a logically inconsistent statement. Why? Because if you can't know anything for certain, how are you certain what you've just said is true? And if it is true, then you've just defeated your own statement. It's not a logical, consistent statement. It is a contradiction. The second leg is empirical adequacy. Empirical adequacy is, does it fit with the known facts? You know, some statements sound great by themselves. You can make the statement and, you know, say, yeah, that makes sense. I understand that. But it doesn't fit with the facts that you know. It doesn't fit with the information that we have from other areas. Here we go. The truth table surely is going to stand now. Okay, so far, no good. For instance, you can believe something very strongly and hold that belief, but it's simply not true. Many of you people, and maybe many of you, believe that Christopher Columbus was the first European to land in North America. And that's a belief that most people have. And you're taught it many times, even in school. But it is a belief that doesn't pass the test of empirical adequacy because it doesn't fit with the known facts. Historically, Leif Erikson, this guy, got to America 500 years before Columbus. So you might hold something and you might really believe it, but when you really check it with the known facts, it doesn't stand up. The third area of truth, the third leg of the truth table, is experiential relevance. Experiential relevance. That means, does it work in life? Now, this is a little bit tougher because it introduces us to the subjective area of life. It may be true, but unless you apply it, it doesn't matter really whether it's true for you or not. You have to apply it. 2 + 2 = 4, but that doesn't matter if you never apply it in life. When you get these three legs, truth table will stand. You know, the closest some people ever get to the truth about God is this statement: God exists. And because that's the closest they ever get, they miss any real help that they could ever have in life. And they miss the liberation that Jesus can bring to them because they don't apply this truth to their lives. And according to the Scriptures, there are certain external, eternal, absolute truths that exist, and they do exist without dependence upon us or whether we agree with them or not. More than 50 years after Christ left this earth, John, one of his closest followers, wrote these words: "Christ was alive when the world began. Yet I myself have seen him with my own eyes and listened to him speak. I have touched him with my own hands. He is God's message of life." Jesus Christ lived among us. People touched him. They saw him. They heard him. They watched him die. And then they watched him come back to life again. He proved himself to be the Son of God by the miracles that he did, by the life that he lived, and by his resurrection from the dead. History supports all of the evidence that we have about Jesus. It is logically consistent. It is empirically adequate. It is experientially relevant. So what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it? Jesus ended his most famous sermon. We usually call it the Sermon on the Mount. He ended that sermon with this story: "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house upon the rock." In other words, Jesus said, it's not enough for you to just hear what I've said. And it's not enough for you to say you believe who I am. You have to get involved. "Therefore, anyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house upon the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, the wind blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice, does not incorporate them into their life, is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash. And James, the brother of Jesus, said, anyone who knows the good he ought to do and doesn't do it, sins. Again, what are you going to do with this? Are you going to let it go in one ear and out the other? Are you going to filter out the parts that you don't like and just continue living your life as usual? Or are you going to respond to the truth that you've just heard? You know, in that story about the wise and foolish builders, Jesus reminded us something very important, something that we tend to forget. He reminds us that storms in life are inevitable. They're going to come, and it doesn't matter whether you're a believer or you're an unbeliever. God doesn't put any of his children in a magic bubble and protect them from the storms of life. Whether we weather those storms or not depends not on what we know, but how we applied what we know. How we put them into practice in our own life. So, here's what I want you to do this week. The psalmist said, oh, put God to the test and see how kind he is. See for yourself the way his mercy showered down on all who trust him. Taste and see is how most translations read. The Lord is good. And I want to challenge you to try this for 1 week. And you don't even have to be a believer to try it. You can try this. Try doing life God's way instead of your ways. Try applying some of the truth that you know, you've heard, you grew up with. Rely on his word, not your wisdom. Here's what I know. If you follow Jesus, your life will be better, and you will be better at life if you follow Jesus. So you say, well, you know, that's great. How are we going to do this? Here's how I want you to do it. I'm going to give you a specific assignment. I want you to take the book of James, only 5 chapters in the book of James. James is the half-brother of Jesus. He's half-brother because Mary is the mother, Joseph the father. Joseph wasn't Jesus' earthly father. He was his, you know, stepdad, as that goes in one sense. I want you to read the book of James, 1 chapter every day. But I want you to do more than just read it. I want you to find something in that chapter every day that you can apply to your life and live that day. So I'm going to suggest that you read it early in the morning, and then you take one thing, just one thing that you find in each chapter, and apply it to your life. You'll find that, you know, James 1 will be easy, James 2 will be easy, James 3, you'll throw the Bible across the room probably because he starts talking about how we use our tongues. Okay, read it, apply it to your life, and then at the end of the day, I challenge you. At the end of the day, I want you to talk to God about how that worked, doing it his way, in that area of your life that you applied it in. And you know what I think you're going to find? I think you're going to find yourself saying, wow. Wow. This works. I didn't lose my temper like I always did. I was kind to that person that, you know, normally I just kind of want to avoid. I didn't say the things that I wanted to say today because I put a guard on my mouth. Put him to the test. I think you'll find that he won't let you down. He won't let you down. In a minute, we're going to have our invitation. Maybe God has spoken to you, and you need to respond. You've been in church all of your life. You've heard these messages. You could tell it. You could preach it better than I could. You could tell your story better than I could. But you've not applied it. It's kind of going in one ear and one out the other. You know, James tells us, don't merely listen to the words and deceive yourselves. Do what it says. And the reason so many Christians struggle in their Christian life is because they've been content with knowing what it says. And they live their life without doing what they know, what it says. And here's what James tells us, you know, if you know to do good and you don't do it, it doesn't say you don't believe it, it says you don't do it, for you, that becomes sin. In a minute, we're going to have our invitation. Before we do, let me pray for us, and let me just say that if God has spoken to you and you'd like to respond, if you come to this side, someone who is trained as an encourager, and let me just say that if you have not been through a Christian Life and Witness class, if someone comes to this side, please don't come and pray with them. This is for people who have been trained with Christian Life and Witness. And then if you come to this side, you can come and you can talk to God, whatever you want to talk to him between you and him alone. Let me pray. Father, thank you for your word, which is absolute truth. And we have the evidence, the three-legged stool test that it can stand on. That is different from any other religion in the world. But Lord, it's tough for us sometimes to move what we believe from our head to our feet. So we ask you to help us to do that today. We ask you to give us the wisdom to know what to do with what we've just heard and the courage to do it. And we'll be careful to give you the praise for it in Jesus' name. Amen.